Well, it's a pleasure to bring in one of my very best friends and one of the very best broadcasters that I have ever known in my lifetime, Tom Joyner, in just a moment. And I was thrilled a few days ago when I found out that Tom Joyner is writing a book that will be out sometime, hopefully, before too long. So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring to you one of the great, great broadcasters in the United States of America, and just got such a great, great resume. I enjoy all the commentaries of Tom Joyner. So, Tom, I don't know what you're going to talk about today, but whatever it is, I recommend that everybody listen and listen carefully.
Well, Congressman John Lewis has been applauded for his courage during the civil rights confrontations of the 1960s, and deservedly so. Those actions of more than 50 years ago, however, do not give him a lifetime pass for criticism when it is deserved. John Lewis is a huge Hillary Clinton supporter, and that adulation has led him to say that President-elect Donald Trump is not a legitimate president. Ask why? Lewis said that Russia was involved in the election against Hillary Clinton. First of all, John Lewis has no evidence that Trump was working with Russia. He is also too highly partisan to make the statement that he made. The Democratic National Committee and Hillary Clinton cost Clinton more votes than any Russian revelation did when they undercut Bernie Sanders and drove his voters away from the Democrat Party. When Barack Obama was elected president, Republicans did not try to disrupt the inauguration, as Lewis and Democrats are doing against Trump. Many of us were deeply disappointed when Obama won the election, but we had enough respect for the Constitution and the country to march and protest against his election. More than 25 Democrats have joined John Lewis in saying they will not attend Trump's inauguration. Now, could they not be called racists? Had Republicans publicly stated their opposition to Obama by not attending his inauguration, the left, including John Lewis, would have called those Republicans racists. The office of the President of the United States deserves our respect, whether we're fans of the person in that office or not. Liberals are hypocrites, and I truly believe they suffer from mental illness. Democrats hope to regain the presidency in 2020. Do they believe that it would be helpful for Republicans to act like the Democrats are acting should a Democrat gain office? We know that's not the case. The far-left juggernaut has been stopped. They will see Obama's unconstitutional executive actions reversed. God revered again in America. Morality coming back into vogue. And America first will be the way of the future rather than continuing to try to bring America down. John Lewis was a civil rights giant. His words and actions today threaten to erase and certainly erode that legacy. I'm going to review reality today by both looking back at 8 years past and looking forward to a future that will not be controlled by a far-left agenda. In just 4 days, Barack Hussein Obama will leave the White House as an ex-president. He will not go away from the national stage, however. The man is too narcissistic for that. While George Bush refused to answer and question Obama for 8 years, Obama has sent the signals that he intends to second-guess Donald Trump and keep his nose in the country's business. It's always been a mystery to me how Obama promised to fundamentally change America by bringing it down rather than raising it up, and then proceeded to do just that, and yet have delusional followers who refuse to see the damage the man has brought upon us. Even as he was winding down his disastrous presidency, Barack Obama appeared before our troops at MacDill Air Force Base to praise Islam and to urge the troops to question Donald Trump as president. Many of our top generals were forced out of the military for questioning Obama. And yet this hypocrite suggests that our military men and women should question a president. Obama came into office with a trail of lies. He blatantly used the color of his skin to con black America into supporting him as the first black president. He used the color of his skin to keep criticism off of his failed policies and to keep them muted. He promised to heal the great divide between the races, and yet in office he did nothing to better the lives of blacks, and instead of healing the divide, he widened it. Now he says that the color of his skin is what people in the South focused on. Frankly, we didn't notice the color of his skin until he was using it as a cover. Barack Obama was born a Muslim. In Islam, anyone who follows Islam remains a Muslim for life. He was enrolled in school by his own mother as a Muslim. He was mentored by communists and Muslims. He got into college using his foreign student status and roomed with two radical Muslims. As president, Obama chose as his top advisor a Muslim, Valerie Jarrett, and proceeded to bring members of the Muslim Brotherhood into sensitive positions in his administration. Upon his election as president, Obama set out on a world tour where he apologized for America and all it has stood for. He bowed to the Muslim leader of Saudi Arabia. Obama told us that our country owed a debt to Islam for what Islam had contributed to the world and to our society, but left out the part about Muslim atrocities and their stated aim to control the world. He downplayed the danger of Islamic terrorism and refused to even acknowledge that Islamic terrorism exists in our world today. No, it really doesn't matter whether or not Obama admits to being a Muslim. What does matter is how he defended Muslim positions, how he surrounded himself with Muslim advisors and bowed to Muslim leaders. It matters that Obama is responsible for allowing Muslim refugees into this country who are not fully vetted, and that he has allowed sanctuary cities to provide a hiding place for the criminals among them. It matters that Obama chose not to address the issue of illegal immigrants who have been deported from this country and who return to bring in drugs, commit rapes, and murders. Two American women were recently killed by an illegal immigrant driver who had been deported from America 8 times. 8 times. Rahm Emanuel, an Obama insider and mayor of Chicago, has pledged to keep that city as a sanctuary haven for illegal immigrants. Emanuel recently said that he would offer safety to them in his city. Emanuel cannot even offer safety to the Americans who are here legally in Chicago. Weekly shootings and killings in Chicago continue to escalate. Rahm Emanuel is a joke, and Chicago is a cesspool of depravity. There are no words to describe fully the damage that a Barack Obama 8 years of dictatorial policies did to our country, beginning with the rate increases to occur this year for Obamacare, and the fact that the whole Obamacare mess will implode in 2017. We will be decades digging out of the hole that Obama's policies have dug for us. Obamacare was structured to collapse after Obama left office. He, Hillary Clinton, and liberal Democrats wanted a government-run national health system. And with the death of Obamacare, they thought that Hillary Clinton, as president, could push that through. We need only look at the debacle of health care offered to our veterans in VA hospitals to see what the danger of a government-run health plan is for all Americans. Average, ordinary Americans rose up to keep Clinton out of the White House and to destroy the deceitful legacy of Barack Obama. A businessman, Donald Trump, was elected president. Liberal Democrats were stunned. The mainstream media, who had done all possible to get Clinton elected, hyperventilated and turned to negativity about a Trump presidency which had not even begun. So-called stars of Hollywood reneged on their promises to leave America if Trump was elected. They chose instead to second-guess the American people who elected Trump and to demean the man they elected. On the abominable show The View on ABC, the far liberal Joy Behar said that Trump was out of his head. Denzel Washington said it best when he said that if we choose not to watch, listen, or read the news, we are uninformed. And if we do watch, listen, or read the news, we are misinformed. The most important thing that keeps me researching and commenting on the news is my desire to bring you the truth, to inform you, not to misinform. I can tell you that it is frustrating on the one hand to hear from people who are in complete denial of the facts on any given subject, unwilling to re-examine their loyalties to any particular political party, and who are stuck in the past. On the other hand, it is truly gratifying to hear from those who want to see light instead of darkness, those who want the truth, even when it upsets something they had long believed, and those who are willing to give a president, any president they did not support, the time in office to show whether their vote was right or wrong. I cannot belong to either one of our two major political parties. I began as a Democrat before that party's far-left elites hijacked it and top-loaded it with people like Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. I then became a Republican, but the failure of Republicans to follow through on promises to correct the course of our country caused me to register as an independent about 16 years ago. I am a conservative, and so I vote Republican most of the time, but in the past I have contributed money and voted for some Democrats. As long as the Democratic Party continues to follow far-left liberals like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, I can't vote for them. And that brings me back to the frustration I feel when people who are registered Democrats refuse to acknowledge that the party is no longer the party that you expected when you registered to vote. You know that family members who were longtime Democrats were not in line with the far-left movement of today that is destroying the party. You yourself don't share that far-left vision of Democrat elites like Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, but it is much easier to go into denial than to confront the truth. World history is replete with stories of great civilizations who fell from grace and toppled into despair. Perhaps the Roman Empire is the greatest of those who lost it all. They took on far too much debt, listened to the voices of the left, overextended their military, and are today but a memory. Our military today is the weakest since the beginning of World War II. Our Navy is no longer the greatest naval power. We are ripe for the taking, except for the millions of Americans who possess firearms and the patriotism to use them against any assault upon our country. Obama has said that his greatest regret is that he was not able to impact our right to keep and bear arms. Hillary Clinton, too, is on record with her desire to ban guns for American citizens. She denies that in public, but she supports it in private. Now, during World War II, a Japanese military officer said that the only reason Japan did not invade the American homeland was because there was a rifle behind every blade of grass. Liberals want to take away those rifles and mow the grass down to where our enemies could see us better. Now, I'm going to repeat again that I have no way of knowing how good or how bad Donald Trump will be as our president, and neither does anyone listening to this commentary or those in fantasy land who know as little as we do but pretend to know it all. What we do know is that when a nation practices evil, there is no way that it's going to be blessed in the long run. We have become a nation that is dripping with corruption and wickedness from the top to the bottom. In the end, you always reap what you sow. The days of reckoning are upon us. And if we are unable to reverse Obama's fundamental changes designed to bring our country down, the future will not be pretty. We have long needed a president, black or white, man or woman, who understands the basics of business. For decades, our leaders in Washington have pushed us toward a global economy and told us it would be good for us. But there is a flip side. Now, workers in the United States must compete with workers all over the world, and our greedy corporations are free to pursue the cheapest labor available anywhere on the globe. Millions of jobs have already been shipped out of the United States, and Princeton University economist Alan Blinder estimates that 22% to 29% of all current jobs will be offshoreable within the next decade unless changes are made. The days when blue-collar workers could live the American dream are gone, and they will not come back unless we reject the status quo offered by people like Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or even entrenched old-timers in the Republican Party who lead the House and Senate. Beyond terrorism, our greatest problem is debt. Collectively, the U.S. government, the State Departments, corporate America, and American consumers have accumulated the greatest mountain of debt in the history of the world. Still, Obama was able to get Congress to raise the debt ceiling again and again until we are now $20 trillion in national debt. Democrats supported allowing Obama to increase the debt, but Republicans bear a share of the blame for not doing more to block it. Meanwhile, the horrendous waste of taxpayer money by federal government has been documented, but not stopped by Congress. Large monetary grants are given for ridiculous reasons, such as studies to watch shrimp react on a treadmill, or money to see the effects of cigarettes on mice. We've all heard about the hammers that the Pentagon was buying at hundreds of dollars each. In settings like these, someone or many someones are getting kickbacks and fleecing the taxpayers. When these things are brought to light, there's a short outburst of concern, but no follow-up in the mainstream media. That allows the thieves to stop buying the publicized hammers and move on to the next ripoff. In reality, we are being sucked into an economic black hole from which our economy may never fully recover. The U.S. government is now in charge of the largest Ponzi scheme in history. We are facing a pension crisis of unprecedented magnitude. Virtually all pension funds in the United States, both private and public, are massively underfunded. With millions of baby boomers getting ready to retire, there is simply no way on earth that all of these obligations can be met. Robert Marks of the University of Chicago and Joshua Rao of Northwestern's Kellogg School of Management calculated that the collective unfunded pension liability for all 50 U.S. states is more than $4 trillion. Social Security and Medicare expenses are wildly out of control. Perfectly healthy Americans are filing disability claims in record numbers because disability will pay them more than trying to go to work. Just thinking about all of this is depressing. But not understanding the problem is even worse. The reckless expansion of the money supply by the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve is going to end up destroying the U.S. dollar and the value of remaining collective net worth of all Americans, again, if change does not come soon. The more dollars that are available, the less each individual dollar is worth. In essence, inflation is like a hidden tax on each dollar that you owe. When they flood the economy with money, the value of the money in your bank account goes down. We see and hear all of these commercials on television speaking of doom and gloom while they try to sell you gold or silver. If doom is coming and gold and silver will be the savior, why do you think they are willing to sell theirs? Prepare for the economic shock by paying down your debt and saving whatever money you can. I know that times are tough. I've been through the tough times myself. But if each of us looks deeply at what our money is spent for, we'll find that there is excess money to save or retire debt. You might have to sacrifice buying cigarettes or beer and whiskey. You might have to use Hamburger Helper and find a myriad of ways to enjoy Spam, as Ann and I did back in the day when we were budgeting for the future. But I guarantee that you are spending money you could be saving. Of course it's hard to save or to pay down debt. But if you do not start now, the coming economic mess will be far more painful. Don't wait until you get a handful of money to save. Start with a dollar or $5. Put your spare change into a piggy bank each evening, as I still do to this day. When you empty the piggy bank, pay down your debt or take the money to a savings account at the bank. Look in the attic or basement or garage to find items you don't use and have a yard sale. You won't get rich from it, but every little bit helps. Trust me, I know of what I speak. Thank God I was never a smoker, and while I am a major investor in a large craft brewery in Washington, D.C., I might drink 6 cans of beer a year. There's a great sense of freedom in being debt-free. No home mortgage, no credit card debt that isn't paid off each month when the bill rolls in. Think of the money one can save when not paying 18 to 30% interest on credit card debt. If you continue to use those cards, you will never get free of debt. Almost 50 years ago, Ann and I fell victim to credit card debt because we were spending more than I earned. The debt was some $1,500 back in 1967 when that was real money. We stopped the madness cold turkey. We retired the debt. Since that time, we have never paid a penny of interest, except for a home mortgage, which was retired almost 30 years ago. I share that with you to show that I have been where many of you are today, and it was painful to get out of the hole, but it can be done if you're willing to make the sacrifices necessary. But don't be surprised when people tell you how lucky you are to be out of debt and have a savings cushion at the bank. The U.S. economic growth depends upon shoppers, and those shoppers are not spending money at the same rate as years before. American factories are suffering from a global economic slowdown. Manufacturing makes up to 10% of the U.S. economy, according to Morgan Stanley. The key ISM manufacturing index has declined for 6 straight months, and it's been negative below 50% for the last 2 months. The strong dollar is making products manufactured in the United States more expensive overseas, lowering demand for American goods. The slowdown in emerging market economies isn't helping trade either. American companies are making less money than they did a year ago. Put together, when America's biggest companies and employers suffer, the economy follows suit. Poor people don't hire others. Corporations and entrepreneurs do. I say all of this to point to the need for a president who understands business. A president who has at their beck and call the financial and business experts who can guide a turnaround. What we have had for many years has been presidents content with the status quo in Washington. Whether or not you supported or voted for Donald Trump, you cannot deny that the man knows the business world. His successes in business have been so great that liberals are demanding that he divest his business interests to avoid any conflict of interest. Most, if not all, of Congress have conflicts of interest every day. Remember, it was just recently that public outrage stopped Congress's members from attaining wealth through insider trading, something the rest of us would be sent to prison for doing. Every person in Congress wants to be on select committees. In those committee hearings, they are oftentimes privy to inside information about some business merger, a new product development, or a company sale. A quick call to their stockbroker in years past with that inside information could make a congressperson a millionaire overnight. It went on for decades before someone finally blew the whistle on it, and the resulting publicity caused Congress to take measures to prevent insider trading on Capitol Hill. It still goes on, but on a much smaller scale. Nancy Pelosi's husband, for instance, has benefited greatly in his business due to Pelosi's position in Congress. This is true of both Democrats and Republicans. Democrats seem to forget that John Kennedy was very wealthy. His father, Joseph Kennedy, had made millions bootlegging liquor during Prohibition. And yet, JFK was never asked to divest his business interests or to show how his father would not benefit financially from JFK's role as president. JFK named his brother Robert to the attorney general position, and yet no Democrat asked Robert Kennedy to divest any business interest or to show how his role as attorney general would not financially benefit the Kennedy family. JFK and Robert Kennedy's brother, Ted, was in a key position in the Senate at the same time, and yet no Democrat or mainstream media sources questioned how it could be that the Kennedys, holding 3 key positions in government, including the most powerful office in the world, would not benefit from JFK's presidency. It was well known in Washington that Democrat Lyndon Johnson was not honoring his agreement to place his financial interests in a blind trust. I've said it before, because I'm in this business, that Lyndon Johnson went so far as to personally call advertisers in Austin, Texas, on behalf of the Johnsons' radio and television interests. He held off other radio station competition from coming into Austin by strong-arming the Federal Communications Commission. And it was only after LBJ left the White House that more than 8 new radio stations were allowed into the Texas Capitol, more than double the number of competitors against the Johnson family stations while LBJ was president. I personally moved one of those stations into Austin. Bill and Hillary Clinton made hundreds of millions of dollars from his position as president and hers as Secretary of State. It is extreme hypocrisy to claim that Trump's businesses might benefit from his presidency. If Trump moves this country forward, we all benefit. The greatest benefit from a Trump presidency is the appointees to the Supreme Court. With the death of Justice Antonin Scalia, liberal America was celebrating the opportunity for Hillary Clinton to appoint far-left justices like Ruth Bader Ginsburg to the court and let the court legislate rather than follow the Constitution. This would have skewed the Supreme Court to the far left for decades. We dodged that bullet with the election of Donald Trump. He gave us a list up front of judges he would consider for the court. Hillary Clinton declined to produce such a list. Democrats can excuse Clinton's loss of the presidency by talking about Russian hacking. And I don't for a minute think that the Russians did not hack into John Podesta's email, and other countries did so as well. But that's not why Clinton lost the White House. In less than 4 days, we will have a new president in the White House. True patriots will unite behind him and give him time to prove his ability to move this country forward. Those filled with hate, that basket of deplorable intolerance, will protest, parade, loot, and burn. They are not patriots. They are anarchists. Conservatives, and I am one, tolerated 8 years of Barack Obama without resorting to violence on a grand scale. The intolerant liberals called for boycotts and protests even before our 45th president takes office, and they vow to continue their disruptive practices for the length of Trump's term as president. They know that activists will resort to violence when marching under the liberal umbrella, but their naked greed for power is more important to them than their country. I'm going to make a bold prediction today. Americans will see a new burst of progress stemming from the White House over the next 4 years. An avid golfer will put aside the clubs to attend to his country's needs. We'll see a man who refuses a $400,000 salary for his management of his country. A man who has earned an outsized ego from his business successes and who will defend that ego by making America successful again. Donald Trump certainly has his character flaws, just as you and I do. He shoots from the hip with his words, but it is his actions in office that we will come to appreciate. Should Donald Trump decide to run for re-election in 2020, I believe that his record as president will easily earn him a second term. That is, if he can stay the course, keep his promises to the American people by ducking the entrenched status quo career politicians and get the backing of patriotic Americans. He will be opposed at every step by a greedy and deceitful National Democratic Party, and he will be undercut by people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who are bitter because the candidate they preferred, Hillary Clinton, didn't win. That is why Trump is right to keep his Twitter account active, to use it to reach out to the millions of followers who want the truth, not the left-wing biased news offered by the mainstream media. To be sure, Donald Trump needs to confine his Twitter remarks to the tasks at hand and learn to let his critics take their cheap shots at him without his firing back. He must choose his battles and let the small stuff pass him by. But we are in a new age of communications now, whereby a president can reach out to millions of Americans over the heads of so-called news organizations who work diligently to undermine conservatism. Just as the Pony Express gave way to telephone lines and fax machines bowed to instant texting, so does Trump's Twitter account move him beyond the dependence upon a dishonest mainstream media in reaching out to the American public. The extreme left in America has seen the roller coaster to oblivion they had us on stopped in its tracks, and that has them reacting like a caged bear being poked with a sharp stick. They are not open to a different path from liberalism. They had God, morality, and truth on the ropes, and with the loss by Hillary Clinton, they face a reversal of that agenda. If Trump stays the course, fulfills his promises, and puts America first, his critics will soon be overrun by believers. There is hope, and there will be change, just not the changes that liberals had hoped for. Carl?
Thank you very much. We're sitting here enjoying every single minute of your commentary today, and I just wonder, as we sit here, and we've got a minute or two or three left on the clock, if there's anything else you'd like to let's get into today.
This business with John Lewis bothers me, Carl. The division of the races in America bothers me. This issue of the women who are planning a, quote, million woman march, which won't be anywhere near a million, to go and protest things that haven't even happened yet and probably won't happen bothers me. The idea that poor people are being told that they're going to lose their insurance if Obamacare is taken off the table, that bothers me because nobody is suggesting that it be taken off the table until there is something better to replace it with. We see the media saying, well, Trump says he's going to have a better plan, but he hasn't given us details yet. Well, the man's not in office yet, and this is not something you just knee-jerk with. This takes delicate planning, and they've been doing that planning for months now, but it's not quite ready. And so Trump is going to be taken into office on Friday. On Saturday, he's not going to do away with Obamacare, or on Sunday, or on Monday. But as soon as the plans they have been drawing up are in place so that no American will lose their health care, he's going to repeal Obamacare, and that will not be too soon for all of those who are paying through the nose for it and who have deductibles they can never think about getting over. I have a nephew who has, I don't know what he makes, maybe 50 grand a year, something like that. Their deductible for his family is over $6,000. There's no way in the world he could come up with that. He's got to go and take his children to the hospital or the doctor, and he's got to come up with $6,000 before he gets anything that helps him in medical care, in Obamacare. So all of those things bother me. I honestly think that we are at a point now where we've got a man who does not owe special interests anything. He does not have any record on in Congress that built up debts that he owes to other congresspersons. He can act without having to go to the status quo that we've all been so used to for so long. So I'm very, very hopeful. Do I think that Donald Trump is a perfect man? Absolutely not. Are you? I'm not. Nobody listening is perfect. But I'm telling you this, the man cares about his country. He's making huge sacrifices for his country, and he deserves a right to get into office, implement his plans, and let us look at the result. If those results are great, thank God. If they're not what we thought they were going to be, there's plenty of time to gripe, agitate, protest, and march. So let's all get behind whoever is the president of the United States, and that's Donald Trump, and give him the opportunity to make America great again.
Well, thank you, Tom. God bless America. God bless Tom Joyner.
Thank you, Carl, and God bless America.